Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
Today I'll be speaking to Edwina, who's come down from Wigan, about her personal experience of breast cancer and how yoga's helped her after her treatment ended. Edwina's been a yoga teacher for 7 years and has also recently started writing poetry about her experience. So thank you so much for joining me, Edwina.
Thanks for inviting me.
I wondered if you could start by telling me a little bit about your diagnosis.
Well, I was diagnosed in January, actually on January the 6th last year, so 2017. I'd actually found a lump the April before, but nothing had seemed too bad about it, because it was tiny. But prior to me being diagnosed, I actually kept finding and realising things were wrong with me, and part of that I actually put down to the fact that I practiced so much yoga. Actually made me very in tune with my body, so I knew something wasn't right. And then by the January the 6th I was diagnosed, and of course diagnosis, part of me wasn't surprised because I knew something was wrong, and then another part of me, I think I went into shock, to be honest with you. But then a couple of days later I was told it was triple negative breast cancer. And with triple negative breast cancer, you have the surgery, the chemotherapy, sometimes the other way around, depending on the size of the lump, and then the radiotherapy, because there's no a targeted treatment for triple negative, because it tests negative for the hormones and it tests negative for the HER2 protein. So is it protein? It is, isn't it? So diagnosis, and then obviously you get asked the question, well, they say to you, chemotherapy, and of course any woman's first question is, am I going to lose my hair? And when she said yes, I sat there and thought, that's not happening. So I decided from there that I wasn't going to take the chemotherapy. But obviously I realised when I started looking into it, and my children were obviously upset, so I realised that I was going to take the chemotherapy, because it was the best course of action.
Yeah. And you mentioned, so you'd found a lump earlier on, and you'd been to the GP, but they didn't think that it was...
It was very tiny, and he said to me, if it starts to change or it starts to grow, then come back, but it didn't do anything. But then, sometimes I'd wake up at night, and I'm thinking to myself, I've got cancer, and then another voice would go, that was stupid. So I couldn't... Part of my instincts were telling me, you've got cancer, and then that logical side was saying, you're just being dramatic. But yeah, I was absolutely right. Then I noticed that the lump had started to grow, so I went back, and I'd been backwards and forwards for about 6 months for different blood tests, and all they really could find was I was anemic, which was obviously from the weight loss. And then eventually, every time they'd looked at it, they just kept saying, well, we've never seen anything like that before. At one point they said, it's growing too perfectly. It's too spherical or something, he said. And I nearly said, I'm a Virgo. If it's going to grow, it's going to grow perfectly because I'm a Virgo. So, which sounds really stupid, doesn't it? But it was just the thought. And then, of course, they did the biopsy.
Yeah.
And then they came back and said, yeah, it is breast cancer. At which point it was like, thank God for that. Because the thought, now, and when you know what something is, then you can do something about it. When you don't know what something is, you can't do it. It's like being in limbo. Whereas once I knew, then I knew that there was a course of treatment that I was then going to go through, having no idea what actually it entails. So you're kind of like at the beginning of this journey, and you can see what the journey is, and you've seen other people in the journey, but you don't actually know what that journey for you is going to be like until you start going through it.
What was that like for you, the actual treatment?
I would say I think I'm probably lucky. I mean, my surgery went really easily. I had a lumpectomy. I had two other lumps that weren't cancerous. So I actually ended up having, I've got a big scar across here, I've got one across there, and of course the sentinel nodes were taken out, but they were clear. And my joke was, because as a yoga instructor, I used to say I was a warrior. So I said, well, at least I'm going to look like I've been in a sword fight. So that was a joke. But because I'd been so physically fit, physically active, I was in handstands, headstands. I was doing very, very strong dynamic poses. And to go from doing that to overnight not being able to lift my arm was a huge, huge shock. And the exercises, of course, that the breast cancer care give you, the exercises after the surgery, I tried to do one of the exercises the day after and I nearly passed out just trying to lift my arm up. So it was, to me, I kind of like coming into the journey. The surgery itself was a shock, in that suddenly my body wasn't what I thought it was. But one of the things you do say in yoga is it is just a body. So I had to start treating my body exactly how I always tell everybody else, that your body changes day to day. So however your body is on this given day, you have to respect that and treat it well. So I was kind of like having, I was, what's the word, when you, I was having to practice what I preached. So everything that I've been saying for 6 or 7 years, there it was, I was having to do that myself.
Do you think you kind of understood what that meant until that point?
I kind of like understood that, but I never appreciated it. In fact, one of my students, she's lovely, she had a knee operation when she first started coming to me, and I was constantly saying, look after your body, be careful, be gentle, go slowly, and it will come in time. But I could do this and I could do that. And so you can't think about what you used to be able to do. You can only think about what you can do from now, this given moment. Forget about the past, because that's gone. Maybe one day you'll get that back, but you've actually got a step-by-step baby steps. And then when I was diagnosed and I tried to get back on my mat, she repeated everything back to me that I'd said to her 2 years previously. And she still does it. She did it last week. She still says it to me now. Do you remember you used to say to me? And I'm like, oh, here we go. So it was ironic in a way that everything I'd said was actually being said back to me by the people. It was. I like to think that teaching should come full circle. So the teacher becomes a student. So everything that I'd learned about life that I'd taught then came back and was being taught back to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And when your treatment ended, did you have an idea of how you might feel when it did end?
Well, obviously they say that when you come to the end of treatment that a lot of people nosedive. Now, I'd gone through the surgery, gone through 6 months of chemotherapy, had a bit of a break, and then I did the radiotherapy because I knew that, because I've suffered from depression in the past, that's how I got into yoga. So I knew that it was quite likely, having suffered from depression, that the possibility I was going to do the same thing. So I actually bought a puppy just before I started my radiotherapy. So I bought a puppy, called him Neo, as in new. So the idea was that he would keep me active, keep my mind active, and prevent me from nosediving. And it worked to start off with, but you kind of like, the only way I've described it when I've been writing things, and it's like you're so excited, you're so relieved to be at the end of your treatment, but it's the biggest anticlimax. Most people that I've spoken to have felt exactly the same. And the day that I finished my treatment, I was that tired. I just drove home and I was like, so it's finished. I didn't feel anything at all. And then it was because you're not monitored all the time. You're not going backwards and forwards to the hospital all the time, especially radiotherapy, because you're there every day. And it's like you've been in this tornado that's been going for 7 months and you're churning away in this tornado, and suddenly you're spat out at the end. And it's almost like, I felt like I was walking around going, what just happened? And it's, as I was a yoga instructor, I kind of like did this metamorphosis from the yoga instructor into the cancer patient. But because you've seen the cancer patient on the news and on the television so much and in adverts and that kind of thing, you understand the cancer patient, even though it's horrible to see yourself turn into that way. Losing your hair, eyebrows and the eyelashes was the worst part. But then when you start to, obviously hair starts to grow back and everything. But as I started to come out of the other side, what I found the most difficult was the cancer patient. I understood her. she kind of like had a purpose. She was fighting this, but now here I was, and I was like, what am I meant to do now? I didn't recognise myself. My hair had grown back curly, which I absolutely love now, but didn't at the time, because it grew back grey. And I was waiting for my bus pass, and I wasn't ready to wait for to be having a bus pass. And I just thought, I can't cope with it. And so even though I'd kind of like bought a puppy to prevent myself from nosediving into depression, very quickly I actually began to do that. And I recognised it by the poetry I was writing, because as the poetry started becoming a lot more darker, and darker but in quite a nice way, which sounds strange. And it was that I suddenly one day stood back and went, oh my God, I'm back here. How did that happen? So I immediately went and asked for help, and I was taken for counselling. Mm. And the counselling brought me back out within weeks, but I think that's because I'd already been there before. But I did go on the Moving Forward course as well, yeah, with breast cancer care. And that was massive help at that time, because that also was able to give me different ways. And it was also that made me realise that I was going to have to go and ask for help, because the Moving Forward course kind of like highlighted to me that, hang on a minute, you're not in the right place here, when I hadn't actually seen that's where I was heading. But yeah, it's common.
Yeah, and you mentioned with your sort of identity, in a way, you knew how to be a cancer patient, but then afterwards you struggled. How did you find that again? How did you re-find your own identity?
It is like, to start off with, it's like being completely lost. And because I didn't, in my bedroom there's mirrored wardrobes, so I was waking up to this image that I just had no idea who she was. And I remember one of the poems I wrote was actually called Who Am I? Because I was looking in the mirror and I was like, I don't know who you are. So at that point it was like being completely lost. But then when I realised I was in depression, I actually went and had my hair dyed. I've got a friend who's a hairdresser, and I asked her to dye my hair. And literally overnight I went from looking, as a friend told me, I looked like Peter Shilton, who is a footballer. And when I saw the photographs of him, I was not happy. So I thought, thanks for that. But then when my friend Hayley dyed my hair and she cut it into a pixie cut, overnight, I get you. Mm. And I'd actually had my hair cut similarly to the way it had been cut before I'd been in depression the previous time. So it was almost like, I recognise her as well. She's a fighter. This one fights. So then my hair started to grow and carried on getting it dyed, and it got longer. But I started writing more poetry, starting to blog. But then I started teaching again. So I actually got back into teaching the yoga. And what I found was, when I was teaching the yoga, it was self-therapy, basically. Mm. So I was very lucky in that I could use the yoga, and also I found a teacher for myself who's a local teacher, and I started going to her class. So I just doing yoga on my mat wasn't enough. I needed somebody to teach me.
What is it about yoga you think that is so helpful in that way?
I think it's like I said, I was in depression when I first got into yoga, and yoga isn't just about what you do on your mat, not by a long shot. Yoga itself means to unite. It means to unite the mind, the body, the emotions, and if you believe you've got one, the spirit. And so they say what you learn on your mat. So when you learn different poses on your mat, you learn things about yourself. And like a forward bend. Forward bends for me are quite difficult, but a forward bend quite often, when you really struggle to let go, a forward bend quite often is about letting go. Twists are very good to create a lot of heat in the body, so that actually can make you give you quite a lot of fire and drive. So when you do poses, they actually have an emotional side to them as well. Mm. And because they have that about them, it means that when you're practicing yoga, you're not just working on the physical body, everything else is going on. And of course the breathing, because you're breathing slower, it allows mind to calm down. So, but I mean, I've been practicing yoga now for a long time, so I know the benefits of what it is that yoga will give you, but it's much more than what you do when you're actually on your mat.
Yeah. Just thinking about when you first started yoga, when you had depression a few years ago, that was about 10 years ago?
It was 2009.
How did you find getting into it, having not known the benefits? Or
I'd tried yoga on a couple of occasions before, but I was a primary school teacher and I had quite a lot of responsibilities. So my life was up at 6 on a computer till midnight, 2 teenage daughters trying to deal with them. So it was my life was very busy.
Yeah.
So when I did try a class at that point, and I could see all these people who, even though I looked physically fit, I really wasn't. And there were these people who didn't look anything like as fit as I did, even though I wasn't, who were doing these poses. So ego actually got in the way, and I couldn't cope with it because I didn't have the patience to be able to accept that this was where I was at this moment in time. I couldn't bring myself to close my eyes. I had to look at what everybody else was doing and compare myself to everybody else, which is what you learn not to do when you're practicing yoga. So when I became depressed and became suicidal, and it was actually a friend of mine who said to me, you need to join a gym, you have got to get into a gym. So she forced me to join a gym, and I tried Pilates, ironically, and then a friend said, oh, there's an amazing teacher that does yoga, go to this class. And it's very difficult. It literally, I didn't have my own mat or anything, but that first experience on my mat, life changed. And it's really difficult to try and explain to. I think part of it was the teacher. If you find the right teacher, then it makes a difference. The first time I tried the yoga, I had the wrong teacher. Perfect for somebody else, not right for me. And that's the difference. But my teacher, it was like I'd been sent an angel. Sounds ridiculous, I know, but and she just seemed to have this ethereal quality about her. I remember desperately wanting to have that, whatever that was. She just seemed to glide about everything that she was doing. And one of the hardest thing was I get on my mat and we did this thing where you raise your arms up, we're doing a sun salutation, and you fold forwards while everybody put their hands on the floor. And I stopped, my hands didn't even get to my knees because that was how tense I was at that point. But from that day on, she was teaching about 3 classes at the gym, so I started going. And within 2 weeks, I'd bought yoga books. I was going to the library, I was getting books, and I bought a mat, I bought everything I needed. And I was get up in the morning. I had a mat on the floor next to my bed because yoga was the first thing I did in the morning. It was the last thing I did at night time. So I literally was doing hours of yoga every day. So some people might have practiced yoga for years. I think I did 10 years worth in the space of a year.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the yoga, it was the meditation. She taught hand gestures. They're called mudras. So there's certain hand gestures that you can use. It was the breathing, especially the breathing, calmed me down. And I learned how to breathe abdominal breathing. And there was something about, there was relaxation at the end. She always do what they call shavasana. And during that shavasana, quite often she would talk about things to do with life, and it always seemed to be to do with me, which was just bizarre. It was almost, it's like she was speaking to me, but obviously she was speaking to us all. But I've learned since, now that I teach, that sometimes you become in tune with people and you can just automatically say something that somebody needs to hear, and you don't even realise that person needs to hear that, and yet you've said it. So I think you become very in tune with people when you practice yoga.
How can someone go about finding the right teacher for them if they've never done yoga before?
Well, the thing with yoga nowadays is in some places it's become quite westernized. I practice a type of yoga called Hatha yoga, where you do a pose, and they're static poses. You do a pose, it's quite slow moving. So you get a time to adjust and move yourself into a pose, be in the right pose, an easier version if that's what you need. And Iyengar yoga as well. Now they use props. It's more precise, but it's still slow moving. So if somebody was gonna have a go at doing yoga, if you're already very physically fit and you like to move a lot, there's a style of yoga called Vinyasa, there's Ashtanga, they're very dynamic classes, or power yoga, hot yoga, of course, personally, I wouldn't do that, but a lot of people would love hot yoga. But if you want something that's more slow moving, if you want something that's more in a meditation style, not saying that the others aren't, but what I see as more meditative would be to find a class Hatha or the Iyengar. Personally, I'd go for Hatha first. It's spelled H-A-T-H-A. Or a gentle class or a beginner's class. Or search, you can go on Facebook, you can go online, search for beginner's yoga and get recommendations. See if, because quite often teachers have got websites and, or you can find them on Facebook. So if you know a teacher's name, you might be able to find them on Facebook. They might have a group on Facebook and then you can see what the people have said about them. But the thing that I would say that try, don't just go to one. I mean, I was lucky because I had the best yoga teacher in the world that I stepped into. Somebody sent her to me. I was really, really lucky. But the previous time I'd done yoga, I'd hated it because she wasn't the right teacher for it. I wasn't in the right place to do yoga at that point anyway, whereas I was later on. But if you search for beginner yoga and or even chair yoga, if you're not able to get, because a lot of yoga, you're up and down and up and down and up and down, and you might even in half the yoga. So if you can't get down on the floor easy and back up again easily, you might be better off starting off with chair yoga. I would ask things like, a teacher, are you able to give me alternative poses? If I'm not able to do things, obviously you'd have to say that breast cancer and that you may have had a lumpectomy or a mastectomy or lymph nodes removed. So you need to make sure that teacher would know to do some adjustments with you. And pranayama, which is different type of breathing exercises. So you'd want somebody that did an all-round class. They might not do breathing exercises every week, but and certainly somebody who does relaxation at the end, because I think that is one of the most important things, is to get those, even if it's only 5 minutes at the end, it's kind of like you've created all this amazing energy for yourself, and that those fast 5-10 minutes at the end allows you to absorb it, and it gives you that time out as well.
Yes.
But definitely ask.
Adria, you've done some videos for us, which would be great for beginners as well, going through chair poses and seated poses, as well as on the floor. And that is good for people who've recently finished surgery in terms of movement, but also from a mental health side, do you think?
Yeah, it has definitely. Both? Definitely, because the mental health, obviously I know a fair bit about mental health, having suffered from depression twice, and yoga itself, because yoga isn't just about the physical body, when you have to slow down on your mat, or when you're learning about yourself on your mat, you're learning not to compare yourself with other people. You're learning not to compare yourself with what you could do yesterday or what you might be able to do tomorrow. And you start to learn acceptance. And when I say acceptance, I'm not saying that it means that you should lie down and let the world walk all over you. That's not what it's about. But One of the favourite things that I do are poses called warrior poses, which are poses where you're standing and they're very strong poses. And when you've had a diagnosis or you've gone through the surgery or the treatment, it does feel as if somebody's pulled the rug from beneath your feet. You feel sometimes like you're falling and that you're completely lost. Warrior poses, a lot of the standing poses, there's a pose called mountain, they allow you to strengthen yourself and to feel your feet on the earth again and to ground yourself. And even if you can't close your eyes, even if your balance is a little bit bad, you still have that sense of, actually, I can feel myself. I'm strong enough to do this. I'm strong enough to deal with this. So that's why the physical starts to cross over with the mental and the emotional as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Adria. Do you have any final pieces of advice for someone who might be looking into starting yoga after treatment?
To be very, very patient with yourself. And this may sound a little strange, but one of the things you will almost certainly do if you try a yoga class, if you find the right yoga classes, you will probably cry. That is perfect, absolutely perfect. Crying is actually a release, it allows things to go. So don't be embarrassed if that happens. And it's part of what the yoga's actually allowing you to absorb the goodness and get rid of the stuff that might be causing any pain mentally as well as emotionally.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Adria. You can watch Edwina's yoga videos and listen to her guided meditation in Becca, our app that helps you adapt to life beyond treatment. You can download the app in your iPhone or Android app stores.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.